Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny. Why does your voice, you know, you were talking normal and then all of a sudden Rolando goes into podcast mode and he's like, hey, hello guys, welcome to Skeleton Boys. We're your horny podcast boners.
yeah. We're horny for horror.
I love horror so much. I'm so horny for it. Oh!
Yeah, I mean, we have an unscientific rating scale. Super horny, though.
Oh, yeah.
Sexy bones. Yeah, well, I thought you were going to mention that I might sound different because I have a different recording with a different cable. But I don't know. I got nothing. I'm keep looking at my wave in it, and I'm just freaked out by my waves. Look at it. It's so high.
Yeah, Rolando right. is actually referring to his vibe. His vibe is wildly out of control, and it's so high.
Yeah. Okay.
Sugar, how you get so high?
Welcome to the show. This week, we will review Deadstream. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. I will give our first thoughts, and then we're going to do a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go to TV Corner to review The Midnight Club.
I was trying to say it at the same time as you.
Episode one, final chapter.
We cannot afford effects on this show, so we got to make them as we go.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I can do effects. I just haven't set it up yet, so maybe something for the future, but probably not because I have to buy a power supply.
Yeah.
It was a
extra work.
Pretty nice thrift find that didn't have a power supply.
So the final chapter, The Midnight Club. This is, of course, produced and directed by Mr. Mike Flanagan, favorite here of the podcast. So John, what you think?
Just quickly going to mention, I'm very disappointed in us for not ever reviewing Midnight Mass. Such a great series. I didn't care for it. I understand people love it. I thought Midnight Club was fine for its setup. I was like, this is interesting. And then when it got into like, oh, the kids are going to tell stories, I'm like, this is for some reason paced awkwardly and just not fun for me.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know if we should give a little bit of the plot. So it says, when cancer cancels your plans for college, star student Inoka finds a sliver of hope at Brightcliff, a mysterious hospice for terminally ill teens. So I'm going to quickly say that Mike Flanagan is, I think, an absolutely important voice in horror. Anything he does is immediately perks my interest, whether he's producing or writing, or especially if he's directing, whether it's stuff on Netflix or like
another Stephen King thing.
Features. Yeah. Yeah. The guy just has a way of blending, drama and, the scary horror stuff very well together, like we were just speaking about, like Midnight Mass, we both loved. And both the House series that he's been doing, the House on Haunted Hill and the House on Blythe Manor, if I think that's what it's called.
Yes.
Two excellent series, but wildly different.
Haunting of Hill House and...
Haunting of Hill House. Yeah. There you go. I think a house. Yeah. And House of Blythe Manor. And I believe you're also a fan of his Ouija board movie, right?
That one, yeah, I did like. The first Wee-Wah mm-hmm. was crap, but the second Wee-Wah, Wee-Wah 2 Origins, the origin story was really good. And I was a fan yeah. of Oculus.
Oculus, yeah, yeah. Oculus also was good.
I never saw Gerald's Game, but it looked really good.
I saw Gerald's yeah. Game. It is fan-fucking-tastic.
I hear it's excellent.
It's excellent.
Yes. I personally did enjoy. He wrote the screenplay for Dr. Sleep. Did he direct it? Yeah, did he direct it?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was personally a fan. Yeah, I liked it.
Love Dr. Sleep. Yep. Yeah. So again, like anything he does is going to be like, okay, I gotta watch, see what it is, because he's just an absolute must. This, unfortunately, I don't think I connected with it either.
No.
I sort of like the setup of like these kids. It just starts off like just a bunch of kids just being kids, teenager show. And then it hits you with the cancer and it kind of like, you think it's going to go right, but it goes left in terms of his storytelling. You
it
know,
hits you with the cancer, folks.
hits you with the cancer storylines. And I'll be honest, I was like, where's this show going? Because I was not as... I could tell that some of the writing, some of the acting was for, I believe, a younger audience.
Yeah.
Maybe suitable for a younger audience. So it's not necessarily for me, which is totally fine. I think I can still watch and enjoy things, even if it's like the age... I'm not like the target age. But
we're old as fuck, so...
Yeah, we're a little cranky bastards yeah. at this point.
We're powdered milk.
And I feel like, I was lukewarm on the show. I wanted to see where it was going. They get to the hospice. And that to me is where it starts to fall apart, because I felt like how they try to portray the other hospice patients was very broad, I think it would be.
Yeah, they're very like stereotypical characters of like, this is the edgy person, this is the sensitive person,
rude person,
this is the rich out of touch person, like,
okay, this is the gay person, this is the you know, this is the wisecracking guy, you know what I mean? It was all kind of,
here's our ethnic friend, like, yeah,
here's our ethnic, they're all, well, a lot of them were, right? And then they get to the actual, what I think the what I feel like the show was going to be about, right? Like this midnight club, and they're all there to like, it seems like the setup is that every episode they're going to tell like stories to each other, and there's like this other mystery of what's going on at this hospice, yeah. right? Like there's like a haunting at the hospice or whatever. And then, but yet they're still going to tell each other stories. And that to me is kind of where like I lost like, the story that she tells, which is actually the important story, because that's what gets her in this club. Because at first, the other kids don't want to like let her in. It's very secretive about it, because I guess there's like other stuff going on, other mysteries and stuff. Very, you know, Goosebumps,
yeah.
Party Boys, teen.
And would you say her story is kind of ruined because you know all that, because she's researching all that, so she's just... Her story is a regurgitation of everything you were being informed about literally like 10 minutes before.
Yeah.
And I was like,
so she's, you know, she has this moment where she's like, well, I'm going to tell you guys a story. And this is the, and everybody reacts and behaves like it's the, like the end all be all of stories that yeah. immediately like thrust her into this group and makes her, an important member. And I didn't feel any of that after her story, because like you mentioned, it was essentially what we had just witnessed. It was her, she was telling a story about herself and how, you know, basically like telling a story about herself and how she got to this hospice, you know, in secretive. Somehow that wowed them and suddenly they're all enamored with her and then the episode ends. And that was, after that was pretty much, you know, bored up to those points, so
yeah. And I will say the first story that was told for the thing was like, I guess it was supposed to be funny for the audience. It was supposed to be scary for the kids.
Right.
I don't know. There was something about it that didn't land right. I just thought it was an annoying, like, bad story.
So the gag is that they try to do jump scares, which is too many jump scares. So it's like kind of an idea of poor storytelling.
Yeah.
But visually, it rings. It's supposed to be like a visual gag of it, right? Like they keep cutting and like jump scare, jump scare, jump scare, jump scare. And it, so simultaneously that also it something was supposed to be kind of
said about the jump scare is supposed to be like this. So this kid, who's like walking in the middle of the street is being accosted by a screaming woman. And I'm going to point out the ethnicity of the screaming woman is an Asian woman. So it's very like Scream. I mean, not Scream, The Ring or The Grudge style screaming.
Right.
And I was like, a part of me was like, why did it have to be so, like, I think it's trying to pivot to be like on the nose. Like, this is what these Asian movies are like. And it's like, why?
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Because it felt very like it was intentionally an Asian
like a
girl.
Grudge, yeah. Ring. Yeah.
And I was like, why? Like, why is it funny? Like, it could have literally been, it just felt forcefully, oh, because, you know, Asian movies are like this. So, like, you know, you always have an Asian girl screaming. And it's like, well, in the early 2000s, sure. But that was like, only because America remade them. That's the only reason it seems like that.
Right, yeah. I think I didn't catch that, but yeah, I see what you mean by that. I think the only a positive I'll take from it is Zach Gilfroy's in it. I love him. So
yeah.
He plays the sweet orderly guy.
Oh,
so
come
far.
On. And Heather Langenkamp. Heather Langenkamp is in it,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Heather Langenkamp is, yeah, she's in it.
She's a fucking legend.
Which was a nice nod. Yeah, it's a nice nod to the Nightmare series, right?
Yep. She's the original.
Right? She's the
original final girl,
The original final girl. Well, isn't Jamie Lee Curtis the...
No, in the Nightmare series. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, the Nightmare series. In the Nightmare series. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, so it was nice to see his sort of like the same cast he always kind of works with in these parts and stuff. I also see Samantha Selene is in it, and she was in Midnight Mass. She played the ultra religious actress.
Oh, she was fucking great in Midnight Mass. Holy shit!
So I'm assuming
give me
that
one
she's
second,
folks.
I feel like I'm hearing a noise. I forgot to turn off my fan.
Okay.
Okay. So weird in my professional studio that there was noise happening. Bizarre.
Yeah. Fruit flies also didn't want to turn it off?
Nope, not anymore, but I meant to send you a photo. Obviously not going to incriminate myself, but shot at a restaurant, you know, kind of far outside of the city. I go to the back. Nothing but drain flies. And some guy that was with me was like, this place is disgusting, right? And I'm like, it's not their fault. Like, their pipes are fucking probably infested and there's not a whole lot you can do about it except for like boiling water once in a while.
Yeah.
But everywhere I'm going in the city now, it's like everybody's got like a fruit fly or drain fly problem. I'm like, God.
That's just a LA sewer... pipe thing. It's just a bad.
I know. We're gonna. It's gonna be a horror movie soon. We're gonna open up the things, and people are gonna be like, you know, it's odd that there used to be like just, you know, hordes of cockroaches lining up this area, but they all seem to be gone. I wonder what's going on. And it's just like drain flies eating people.
Well, no, they partner up and they've gone airborne. The roaches and the fruit flies are taking roaches airborne to attack us.
Oh, good for... Yeah, because they're like, this is unfair. Our brothers in the South all have wings. In California, we've got nothing, and we're smaller.
Yeah. And Tanner.
That's gonna alarm all our like East Coast and like West Coast friends. Like, what do you mean cockroaches fly? I'm like, yep. And they're fucking huge too.
And they if they were our East Coast friends, they'd be like, well, they our roaches wake up before you. And I was like, that's true.
our roaches will just hang out and smoke cigarettes on the corner and then beat you up. That's East Coast roaches.
East Coast. Okay. We were disappointed in the Midnight Club. But the big question, John,
is
are we going
Southern roaches more worse than West Coast roaches? Yeah. I think so. I see roaches here. They're not that bad. All right. That's our review of Midnight Club. And
you're going to start the East Coast, West Coast beef, man. Let's put that down.
No, they can fight all they want. I still feel like I have never encountered roaches as bad as from like where we come from. Those monstrous dinosaurs with fucking huge ass wings and even sharper leg hairs. Yeah. Yeah.
They're not scared to fight. Yeah.
Yeah, they break skin when they scratch you.
Because they had a little bit of that South American flair.
Oh, yeah.
Because they come...
Yeah, when they fly, they sound like maracas, you know? They don't... Yeah, right. Every time they fly by
ear, all right.
When they fly by ear, they sound like... I was like, what the fuck was that?
That was scary, but it was in rhythm. All right, so, John, are we continuing the Midnight Club?
No.
No, we're not going to be members of the Midnight Club?
No, we're not. And I'm not just saying that because we might be recording two episodes today and we definitely did not continue it. But I just feel like in the future, which is going to be an hour from now, we're going to decide to move on and maybe possibly Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities a try, because Tim Blake Nelson's in the first episode, so why the fuck not?
Oh, did you get a screener of that? Because that's not out yet.
I'm on the piratebay.org, not endorsing them.
That's okay. Sounds familiar.
I'm not even sure if that website exists anymore.
I don't know either, I've been... For a good decade, I've paid for all of my content, so...
Yeah. Yeah. We've hit that point, I'm like, definitely not gonna pay $10 for this, but I'll pay $5. Definitely, yes.
Yeah. They found it. Okay, so no, we're not continuing the Midnight Club. Tell us we're wrong then. You know, message us, email us, Instagram us, Twitter us if that's still a thing. Whether or not we're wrong, maybe we should continue it. As of now, we're not.
Yep. It's, yeah.
It's done.
If you want to, like, come and tell us in person, you can go ahead and fucking walk right up to our front door at 200 North Spring Street, Los Angeles, California, 90012.
If you have the balls to tell us to our face,
walk straight into the front door of our house. At 200 North Spring Street, Los Angeles, California, 90012.
Just bang the door and down until you tell us to our face.
I don't give a fuck what your opinion is, but if you want to tell us at 200 North Spring Street, Los Angeles, California, 90012, go ahead and do that. If you want to send us an angry letter, go ahead and address it to 200 North Spring Street, Los Angeles, California, 90012, to City Hall, not to the Skeleton Boys. All right, thank you. Moving on.
All right, moving on. We are moving on to our main review of Deadstream. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Armando, drum roll, please.
Deadstream. There's a lot of movies named Deadstream. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So for Johnny's five-word plot summary for Deadstream, 2022, coming in at number three, whiny, scared, of guy. Sorry, whiny guy, scared of women. That's what I was just saying. I was like, I'm missing.
We
something.
Got there. Yeah, it was good.
Whiny guy scared of women. Coming in at number two for 2022's Deadstream. Desperate 30-something explores closets.
Yeah, true. All true.
And very good. Coming in at number one for 2022's Deadstream. Shudder original. Right? Am I wrong? Yeah, Shudder,
this is a Shudder original.
Influencer avoids media witch hunt.
Okay.
You like all that accurate. One? You like that one?
It's accurate. It seems vital to the plot.
I should just write taglines for movies because they're just too clever.
You should go on Cameo, charge people money to do... five-word plot summaries or something.
Well, guess what? We've got money in the bank. I've made $3.
$3.
So somebody
charge
thought,
five.
I mean, it's because somebody thought it was activation fee. Somebody thought it was Gary Sinise and Forrest Gump. Unfortunately, but I.
Do your Gary Sinise. That's a good pull. Your Gary Sinise is good. You do your Lieutenant Dan is really good. Do it.
I don't remember. Don't be shy. I don't remember. Used to be really good at this. This is true, though. I don't remember any of the lines anymore. I remember all Force lines.
So I was about to say, I just realized that your Lieutenant Dan appreciation is actually Forrest Gump's.
Yeah.
It's a good Forrest Gump appreciation.
Hey, Lieutenant Dan, I've got ice cream. Lieutenant Dan, ice cream.
That is good, man. You took me there. I didn't see that movie in like decades, but that you doing that, just like, I know exactly the scene you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't Excellent. Remember anything other than like, get down, shut up. it's like the one Gary Sinise line I remember.
yeah. Academy Award. Give them Academy Award for that.
They should. Gary Sinise, I feel like I want him to come back.
He's a hardcore Republican, so maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean, we have no political affiliations, but probably don't listen to us.
Vote blue. Blue wave 2022. Okay, so that all has to do... nothing with Deadstream here. So the Deadstream, it is about a disgraced internet personality attempts to win back his followers by live streaming one night alone in a haunted house where he accidentally pisses off a vengeful spirit, which is very, very funny. So this is kind of like horror comedy, very much in... you're wheelhouse, John. You like the horror comedies, right?
I do. Yeah, this was I really fucking enjoyed this. It was super funny.
Yeah,
they did a great job. I think what his wife and our star, so it'd be Vanessa and Joseph Winter, wrote this together, and directed it together. And it's like they're very much making fun of a lot of like YouTube influencers, which is really funny. It's really good. Which Vanessa Winter apparently has directed a segment of the newest VHS movie.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this was great. This guy did like a good job of I felt he was more believable as this type of person than, what's his name? not John Raphael from because we did what was Spree. The name? What was the name? Spree. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
I felt like this guy was more of what I assume an influencer is like, you know. Even though he's like a bit older, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe he's somebody that never had like a good job or couldn't hold a job, and he finally found fame as a personality. Right.
Let me add to that. I think the idea. Well, first, I think the idea for you was that he was supposed to be bad, right?
Because
he was kind of bad, and the Joseph Winter character Sean Rudy is. He excellently plays that type of YouTube personality. I recently they just did a thing on the Try Guys. They had their controversy because one of the members cheated on his wife or something. Did you know?
No.
Did
which you hear one, any about which this? One was this?
The white one. I don't. Not the Asian.
I think they're all white except for what's his name? The Asian guy.
Yeah. So one of the it was the one that was married, and apparently his big thing was that he actually stepped out with one of his interns. It was like a big like thing, and they had to put out, so they fired him, of course, and they became. I think they're now only four of them instead of five or something, or maybe they're three instead of four. I don't remember, yeah, but
spill the tea.
I got to, well, I don't know why. I was one day on Twitter and doom scrolling, and I saw that they had put out like an apology video about the controversy. I was like, I don't even know what controversy is going on. And they kind of broke down what happened, and just hearing them talk, hearing them.
Ned Fulmer. You piece of shit from Jacksonville, Florida, 35 years old. I don't know why, like, I don't, like, it's, oh, what a bummer, but I don't know why people give a fuck about people's personal lives that much. I don't know what that has to do with the show. So he cheated on his wife. It's like,
well, it was an employee. And
oh, that sucks.
I guess, yeah, part of it was that he was an employee that he was cheating with. And so it, like, it kind of just like, it's what it says. But I mean, yeah, no, he purposely, like, they had started a relationship together. So there's all this like legal business stuff. I guess what it was is that it was hurting the brand. And he, I don't know why I'm explaining all this, but so they, just like, Sean Rudy, the character here, Joseph Winter, brilliantly portrays somebody who did something wrong, who's apologizing for it as the movie starts, and he decides to come up with this big comeback, right? Coming into a haunted place. But of course, he's not too stupid to realize that the place is actually haunted and puts himself way in over and over his head, which is actually a really funny premise.
Which, like, actually it's being even funnier because he like prefaces it with like, and here I'm at the most haunted place I could get into that wasn't famous and had already like, and would allow me to just sneak in.
Yeah.
Going back to Ned Fulmer, Ariel Fulmer is a gorgeous woman, okay. So I don't know what he's doing. And Eugene Lee Yang, who's like really great, is the one non-white guy in the group.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, the Try Guys. They are, I guess that it's actually kind of relevant, right? Because it's about both of them are dealing with brand crisis, right? Like he needs to get.
You're talking about
comeback.
Like, this happened like a month ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It happened like a month ago. Yeah. So these YouTube things happen all the time, apparently. They're always putting out apologies for saying racist things in their videos or doing things or, you know, questionable things.
Unless you're one of the, what are the brothers called? The Logan brothers? Those fucking assholes?
No. Yeah. Yeah. The Paul brothers or some shit.
Yeah.
So he's cut of that ilk, and I think they do an excellent job of skewering that personality. I think Joseph Winter perfectly nails that type of individual excellently. I believed for every second that like he easily could have been one of these like quote unquote like influencers or like personas that you see on these social networks that maybe you see a glimpse of, but then you realize that they are wildly popular and they're millionaires and they, you know, they have all this fame, I guess, internet fame. And I'm not a,
and also even going down to like the fandom, where you see like people that are older than a certain age or just basically talking shit about him, like he's a fucking idiot.
Right.
And then all like the young kids, I'm talking like 13 and younger, are like super fans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of how that
exactly
happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I guess that's how maybe we, I guess there's a higher concentration of, younger users on like social networks, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, so their audience does skew younger. And I think they did a excellent job on just you know, doing it, setting up a live stream, and they have really funny comments. That I can't remember any of them on the top
yeah,
of my head.
Yeah, they were funny.
But they were accurate. They seemed accurate to what you would find in any comment. Excuse me, any kind of like comment board you would find on YouTube or Reddit or, you know, any of these posts and stuff. So Facebook.
And not, you know, not for nothing too. I don't know the overview of the amount of days or how this was scheduled for shooting, but he is insanely consistent, like with his character and with his emotions and with his energy. And it seems like it was mostly overnights for a lot of it. I mean, a lot of it they could have shot day for night. I mean, night for
right.
day. Mm-hmm. Day for, what, I always fuck that up. Where you mask daylight to make it seem like it's nighttime inside is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
There's a term for it that I'm blanking on right now because I'm going through it on the job I'm on right now. So
unprofessional. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. No, just kidding.
But yeah, he was.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
fantastic.
Fantastic, I mean, performance.
Everybody. Yeah.
And the thing is, we're actually with him, like, you know, 100% of the time. Like, he's like POV'd, you know, selfied, camera'd, night, you know, 100% of the time. He's like, the camera's constantly on him. So, yeah, I think it's important to point out the performance he had. He did give. I mean, it's like, it's accurate. It's through. It's consistent all the way through the end.
Yeah,
and pretty unlikable. He's a really annoying, unlikable person. Now that as a character,
100%. But and not once did I want him to die.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like I'm not saying he dies or anything. I'm just saying like not once did I want him to like. You watch certain movies and they make decisions, and you're just like, I don't. This person needs to fucking die. Like this guy, I'm like, oh, I hope he makes it. What's gonna happen?
So when I was watching this movie, one thing occurred to me.
It's very Evil Dead. Sorry.
What? Yes, that's exactly where I was going with this. That
oh, okay.
This is exactly John's favorite movie.
yeah, basically, yeah.
Pretty much done as a. It's as almost a, like found footage, live stream, POV,
fan
camera,
movie almost like.
Yeah, almost yeah. A fan movie. Yeah, like if the Evil Dead was shot. You know, whatever, like I guess they are making a new Evil Dead, right? But if they were to make like a I don't know, what is this, like a live stream movie, this would be at the, you know, there was Blumhouse, I don't know if it, well, actually no, I don't remember if it was Blumhouse or not, they were gonna make a found footage Friday the 13th movie that never got off the ground.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's probably for the best because they I think there. Did you know that there's a giant lawsuit between the screenwriter and the director? That's why that's why we haven't seen anything.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
So, the director owns the character Jason, but the screenwriter owns all the other, like the mom, the first one, basically the story of the first one. Oh. And recently, I think A24 and NBC are going to put out a Camp Crystal Lake prequel series.
Oh, that'll be fun.
So
yeah,
I think it'll be okay. It has Brian Fuller in it.
Cool.
He directed, created Hannibal and Pushing Daisies and what is it? Wonderfalls.
Wonderfalls, yeah. Yeah. Dead Like Me, right?
Dead Like Me, yeah. All excellent stuff.
I would also say that'd be an interesting take on, there's a whole lot to suggest that, was it Pamela Voorhees? Was that her name?
Mom, I believe so, yeah.
Definitely was killing people for a while. Like, mm-hmm. a lot to suggest that she was just a serial killer.
So I think it's going to focus almost similarly to the Bates Hotel, is the sense I got. Did you ever see that?
I saw a little bit of it with Charlie.
It didn't look that interesting.
From yeah, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
What's his name from?
So, yeah. What did you think of them, you know, poking light, skewering Evil Dead? Or after paying homage? I think it's a lot of homages, too, to Evil Dead.
I thought it was great. I mean, one of my favorite, like, nods is his obsession with trying to hide in closets, because that was actually a joke in Army of Darkness that got cut. They were thinking, because Ash Williams from Evil Dead, this is going to turn into my fucking knowledge or trivia about the Evil Dead.
Did you know?
Ash Williams ultimately is not a hero character. He is a coward who refuses to die. So he's not heroic. He just doesn't want to die. But he does a bunch of heroic shit because he's like, fuck that, I'm not dying. He does and try to save people, but yeah.
Oh, one thing that I forgot who framed it this way as well is that he's actually smarter than the Necronomicon and like all the Deadites and stuff. That's why he's actually smarter than them. That's why he's the hero.
Yeah, he's just so clever. Yeah,
he's your average, you know, scared dumb guy, but he's a lot smarter than the people he's fighting, which is why he defeats them. They're just like, oh, that's true. That actually does ring true.
But what one of the cut jokes in Army of Darkness was when the big fight is about to happen at the end. They're like trying to find Ash Williams, like what happened to him, and they open up like a random closet, which is kind of funny that there's like a random closet in this like medieval times fucking like destroyed castle. But they open it up and he's just like hiding, clutching something, like, Ash, are you okay or whatever? And he turns and looks like, oh yeah, I was just looking for something. Oh, here it is, like my cloak or whatever. But the truth was he was just being a coward. But they cut it ultimately because it didn't fit what he had been doing the entire movie.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's true, too.
So I think that's what the nod is to him, like, running into a closet, like, almost every other scene, which is kind of funny.
Which, at times, didn't... I think they were also maybe playing with the idea that maybe he was... purposely running and hiding. It was hard to distinguish like whether he was pretending or when shit started going real, it's when it actually he started like freaking out, because he still had the same kind of like persona the entire time. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
He at first it seemed like he was putting on maybe a show, trying to like gain viewers, trying to gain recognition from his stream or whatever. But then once things get real and he meets the quote unquote fan, there was no change in persona, I guess. Does that make sense? There was no like drop of character he did. He was kind of like consistently more or less the same person. He just tried to survive now.
Yeah.
And which I thought was kind of interesting. Like,
yeah, so like, it kind of makes you think like whatever wrong things he did because he thought he had to keep going and doing these things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like
he's somewhat pathetic. Yeah. It's like,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like he was his persona in a way, right?
Yeah. He's in retrospect, like a slave to like notoriety. Which comes full circle for like the main theme of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Wanting an audience.
And trying to do anything he can to get it.
So should we go into spoilers Because I realized, like, spoilers kind of happen pretty early on, like almost midway through the movie.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. So at one point, after he sets up a shit ton of cameras in all these rooms, which, by the way, like, this house looked really cool. It was, like, very well done. like these people definitely watched a bunch of, like, entering haunt, like, quote unquote haunted houses for, like, ghost adventure movies and or shows or whatever, and just replicated that. He gets frightened by somebody claiming to be a super fan, which I was like, oh, what an interesting thought that there's going to be a super fan. I almost thought like this person was going to be like a serial killer obsessed with him. Until that got ruined because I wanted to look up what the actress has done also. So that kind of ruined it for me. This person ends up being like the ghost of this house. After he sees something in a closet and he decides, nope, don't like what this symbol looks like. And he smashes it to pieces. Finds out later from a lady on an internet video saying like, yeah, I had to sacrifice a finger, which he finds a box with a finger in it. And he just assumes it's like haunted lady's house finger. Is like, she made this like talisman almost to ward her spirit off or to keep it at bay. But he smashed it because he was scared of it. That brought back her power and brought her back. And, now she understands what his influence is, and like, so she wants that to find an audience. That's where it gets a little flaky for me, because I'm not entirely sure what she's trying to do. I know she kind of possesses him a little bit, and she wants their souls because they make it seem like she wants a family, but that's not what she wants. That part.
There is a storyline there. There's a storyline there where they try to make a comparison between the ghost character and him, that they both want the same thing. They both want like notoriety or attention, right?
Yes.
Or something like that. And so he comes up with this plan, like, oh, I know exactly what this person would do and stuff like that. So he knows this type of individual. Yeah, that storyline I don't think necessarily completely landed with me, you know?
I was just piggybacking off that. It kind of felt like they wanted one more twist, and the reveal was she never wanted more souls in that house. She just wanted an audience, maybe for like a mass possession. I'm not entirely sure how that works. Like that's where it gets kind of muddy for me.
Right. Yeah. I think that was that part didn't really connect with me. It just, I had a lot of fun with the horror and the comedy elements of this more than anything, you know, like, especially that I did not know that it was a riff like on Evil Dead 2 or just the series in general, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I had no idea what this was about. You just suggested it. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I was like, oh, this is fucking funny. This is great.
I remember, it's, like I said, like the way I always describe Shudder is that it's like a slow drip. Like it just constantly has these like movies that come out a little at a time, and Shudder's original are kind of like, some of them are okay, some of them are not okay, right? But I just remember reading a lot of people really loving this movie. Like, I had a lot of attention. I was like, well, you know, why not? And the trailer looked good.
It's also a pleasant gross, surprise, but like grossly funny. Like at one point, every time he gets knocked out, I forgot the name of the woman, the spirit of the house. But she always sticks her like decrepit finger up his nose. And at one point he pulls out a fingernail from his nose, and like, he even mentions it. He's like, what's with these like fingers? Why is she so obsessed with fingers? But like stuff like that was really fun. Basically anybody he runs into is not alive. Like he thinks he's being helped up by a cop, but it's another dead person. It turns into like a dead, like a gross zombie thing.
Right. Yeah.
Keeps running into a different sort of like gross monster looking things that are very Evil Dead-ish, like Evil Dead 2, like the monster at the end.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and then I thought it had actually a fantastically fun ending. I thought it was super funny. Like fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not super funny, but like, because he's able to like finally beat her and like sacrifice a finger of his.
Mm-hmm.
Which that part was also gross, where he has a hard time chopping his finger off, but he finally does it. And then, so she's gone and he thinks he's good and he's like survived after he's gotten possessed too, which is another nod to Evil Dead 2. Like, this is another such an nod, Evil Dead series, like inspired movie. He thinks he's safe. And then on a stream, you see like every time he's trying to walk out a door, like all these other monsters that have popped out are just like starting to crawl into the house and about to attack him. And then it goes black. I was like, yeah, rad. That was great.
Yeah, no, yeah. I this is a movie that I would love to just like, it's a good midnight show movie, you know, like especially if people already kind of are familiar with it, there'll be more fun, people would laugh more at all, you know, they already know the jokes, already know the gags and stuff. This would be a fun movie to screen with other people, you know. This is an audience movie, you know, so
yeah.
So that would be super fun to do. This is definitely like a cult midnight movie I can see playing. It's just a movie to have fun with. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's definitely going on my list of movies that like I will rewatch or recommend.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Especially for such a low budget film, it accomplished a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. It was kind of extraordinary to know that it's basically just the husband wife team that kind of did everything, and then they have like some other actors in it. And like I had mentioned, he's in like 90% of this movie, the guy.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
And so when you have something like that, it's like it's the whole movie's really hinged on his character does, and it's a testament to him and his talent, right, to absolutely just give a really interesting scaring performance on the influencer, and then, you know, taking homage to the Evil Dead series. That's always smart.
Yep.
to take from the best, you know. So,
and composed by Joseph Winter himself. So our main actor.
Oh, really?
Like,
yeah.
Do all those, like, because there's funny moments where he's like, and of course you can download this mix at whatever. But here it is, and he would like start playing a song or like a thing he made for like a new room he was walking into.
Yeah, so, I just remember when I was. I'll share a quick story that when I was younger, I would read a lot of like, I was obsessed with movies, right? So I'd read a lot of like movie sites and internet stuff, and I remember reading about. What is it like South by Southwest, the festival, right?
Yes.
They have like a movie section, and every year I'd read about amazing midnight screenings of these movies, and the audience were totally enraptured and stuff like that. And I could see a movie like this going to like a festival, especially like a South by Southwest. Well, maybe not South by Southwest anymore, but when I was growing up in the late 90s and stuff like that, 2000, I was getting into movies.
Like, this would be just great, those kind of Beyond Fest, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like a smaller, you know, kind of, you know, independent kind of ran film festival, smaller film festivals. This would be an absolute joy, an absolute fight to watch. And I can see an audience just like going crazy for it. So This movie kind of reminds me of what I used to like read about, and read reports about, or screenings of. Generally, they were horror movies or like Fantastic Fest, right?
Yeah.
Alamo, Fantastic Fest is a big one now too. Where they show a lot of really fun, obscure, odd movies and stuff. So this movie's in that wheelhouse, I believe.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yes, excellent. Alrighty. Do you want to just go to ratings?
Yeah, let's do it.
John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy.
I'm going to give 2022's Deadstream 8.8 sexy Evil Dead bones.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to do the same. I really enjoyed this. This was a really nice find. Really talented guys. Can't wait to see what they do next. So, yeah, I will also give it 8 out of 10 sexy spooky bones.
Fantastic.
88.
I was going to do one of his screams, but I'm like, nah, I think we've heard enough.
Okay.
It's every 5 seconds.
Yeah. No, he was good. Yeah, he definitely had that character down. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky!
Ah!
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.